Practical Prepping Podcast. We're helping everyday people become prepared for whatever emergencies come our way. Where gear is good, but knowledge is better, because the more you know, the less you have to carry. We're your hosts, Mark and Krista Lawley.
Okay, this is a new twist on an old question. And that question is why you should get prepared.
Why should you get prepared?
Well, we've got several reasons here, and one, and you're famous for saying this, stuff happens.
Stuff happens. Absolutely. Guaranteed.
We need to get prepared because stuff happens. Also, being prepared gives you options.
Yes, it does. It's nice to be able to have choices and not panic.
And being prepared gets you through unexpected calamities.
Mm-hmm. You know, things can happen that no one can tell the future. You can't foresee that your house is going to burn tomorrow or you'd have 3 flat tires on the interstate. Those things do happen.
Right. And because we want to provide for our families.
Because we are responsible. We say we're responsible. We need to live like we're responsible.
And because we don't want to be dependent on others.
And I think particularly that means we don't want to be dependent on some sort of random, unknown governmental person or agency that may not be there when we absolutely need them, actually.
Right. Now, when we're talking about prepping, we're not talking about doomsday prepping. We're not talking about building bunkers or preparing for nuclear holocaust. We're not talking about planning to live in the woods for a year. What we are talking about is practical preparedness. That's what this podcast is about, hence the name Practical Prepping. Being prepared means having the basic necessities on hand to get you through the event, or at least to sustain you until help arrives.
You know, Bob Childers has said that being a prepper is nothing more than making sure that you and your loved ones will make it through the next big thing that is out of the ordinary. Planning for all of you to live through until that problem is over. So, Mark, why should we get prepared?
Okay, let's dig into this. We said first, because stuff happens.
Like what kind of stuff?
Well, we're accustomed to natural disasters. We live in an area that experiences tornadoes quite frequently.
Yes, many, dozens actually.
We're near an area that experiences hurricanes.
Mm-hmm. You know, hurricanes can drive further inland than most people realize. I certainly learned that in 1989 with Hurricane Hugo that made it way past Charlotte, North Carolina.
Absolutely. And Hurricane Katrina was still a hurricane when it got to Birmingham, which is 200 miles inland.
Mm-hmm.
So we're preparing for tornadoes. We're preparing for hurricanes, ice storms.
Some listeners in some parts of our country, right here, even in the middle of April, are having snowstorms. Many, many inches of snow are falling in the Rocky Mountain areas right now.
Right. Stuff happens. Mm-hmm. We experience wildfires.
And there's also earthquakes that are happening somewhere on this planet pretty much any time.
And though it's not so common in our country, volcanic eruptions and tsunamis.
A lot of times those go together too. Have you ever noticed a lot of times if a big volcano has blasted that a tsunami warning would automatically go off in coastal areas?
And tsunamis can go along with earthquakes as well.
Absolutely.
So stuff happens. Natural disasters, those are things that we can't do anything about. But we also have man-made problems.
Oh yes, I think the year 2020 certainly illustrated that better than anything I can think of, that we had a worldwide pandemic, and buddy, did it change everybody's life.
It did. That COVID came from a lab, and it didn't occur naturally. COVID-19 does not occur in the wild.
No, it was something that
it came out of a lab, and it brought lockdowns.
Right.
A lot of people were unprepared for those lockdowns.
Certainly.
How about terrorist attacks?
Well, you know, terrorist attacks are still something that we live with on this planet. There's always a cell somewhere that has a grievance, and their way to deal with that is to produce fear, to produce terror. It's a senseless act of violence, and it needs to be curbed. And I know that, you know, it's basically back to good versus evil. And so as long as we're living here on this earth, we're going to be seeing the good versus evil battle going on. I mean, to name a few cases in point, of course, the World Trade Center, 9/11. There were chemical attacks on subways. I remember the SARS attacks
in Japan.
In Japan. Public places, there's workplace shootings.
There were the railway stabbings in London.
Exactly. There's shootings and violence going on in restaurants. I mean, we're not trying to scare you, but we're just relating some things that have happened that have caused some fear and some terror and have absolutely had an impact on someone's life. And it's just so many people were caught unprepared and completely victimized mentally, financially.
Some physically.
Physically.
So what we're doing is we're preparing for unexpected events and, you know, some other things that occur to someone every single day. And we don't think of these as things that we need to be preparing for at times. But how about job loss? You can lose a job and it can take 3, 6, 9 months to get a comparable job. And I know that when we have gone from 2 to 1 income, our prepper supplies have helped us get through that. When we had less income coming in, we were able to save some money in the grocery store and eat out of our prepper pantry.
Right. We spent the money ahead of time so that it prepared us for the time when there was no money to spend.
Right.
And it did get us through.
And along with job loss, you can also see folks having injuries or illness, and these take recovery time. And oftentimes that recovery, that surgery, that injury results in a loss of income. So we need to be prepared for that loss of income. How about the death in a family?
Right. A death in a family, and a lot of times this has a great bearing on, is this the breadwinner of the family? Is this one of the income earners? There's so many things that can happen that a death in the family can have an impact on those that they leave behind. And it shifts the load of responsibility sometimes from one to another, because when that one individual has passed away, it shifts the load of responsibility onto those that remain behind.
Could be caretaking. It could be providing income.
Parenting.
But if nothing else, we need to be prepared to be able to make that trip in a short notice.
There are areas where funeral homes are opening up a little more, easing up on some of the COVID lockdowns.
Even if it's not the funeral, if it's a close relative, you want to be with the family.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be prepared to pick up and make a 500 or 1,000 mile trip. Point being there is we need a stash of cash.
A stash of cash and to be able to pick up and go when needed.
Right.
On a very short notice of time.
Right. And another reason to get prepared is because the Schumer hits the fan from time to time.
Don't you love how he characterizes that?
Well, stuff hits the fan. And it's going to hit the fan from time to time. And SHTF is not always grid down, no electricity,
the
end of the world type thing. So
right.
Just things hit the fan and we need to be prepared for that. I mean, how many would have put COVID into an SHTF? Well, when everybody was told to stay home for 2 weeks, that hit the fan. There were a lot of people unprepared.
Right.
One roll of toilet tissue for the house, and that doesn't last for 4 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 weeks.
And they were unprepared for that goal line to continue to move. I remember at first here in Alabama, we were told schools and businesses would close for 2 weeks. Well, that was just unheard of, but we all hung on to the 2 week timetable, and then that turned into 4 weeks, and then 8 weeks, and then 12 weeks.
And before you know it, 9 months.
13 months went by. It's just, this is what happens when, you know, something unprecedented takes place.
Okay, so the bottom line there is we need to get prepared because stuff happens.
Yes, stuff happens, absolutely. And I really like this next statement. And I've read it and I've reread it, and it's so important. And here's the statement. Because when we need it, the time to prepare has passed.
Yes.
Car insurance, seat belts, fire extinguishers, smoke detectors, these mechanisms are very, very helpful to have. But when those emergencies are already taking place, that's not the time to go out and try to get prepared.
Can't call your insurance agent during the wreck
No.
and get the insurance.
Or after and say, is it too late for me to get car insurance? I just totaled my car.
Or trying to put a seatbelt on when you're sliding down the road and you see the wreck coming.
Or needing a fire extinguisher and not having one.
Exactly. The time to do it is before the situation starts.
That's exactly the reason why we carry spare tires in our vehicles. You know, a lot of times you can't even buy a car much anymore without at least some kind of spare tire going along with it. And why do you think that is?
I don't know, but it used to be a whole tire.
It used to be a whole tire. That's
now
right.
It's that little donut.
Well, because they don't want you to traveling, you know, a 1,000-mile trip.
Well, they do it to reduce their cost.
Of course.
Is why they do that. Mm-hmm. If you're purchasing a vehicle, make sure you have a spare tire. You don't want to be out on a road somewhere at night and find that you need one and don't have it.
We have added a way for our listeners who would like to support the podcast to do so. We love our coffee, so you can go to buymeacoffee.com/practicalprep and buy us a cup of coffee. That's buymeacoffee.com/practicalprep.
Here's another good example about preparing ahead of time, because when we need it, the time to prepare has passed, and that's toilet tissue. Do you buy it in the 8-pack, 24-pack, 48-pack pallet size? How do you buy it, or do you purchase one roll at a time?
Right. Same thing like with paper towels. But toilet paper is a better example. I don't really know of anybody that's going to buy one roll at a time. Most folks are going to buy at least a 4-pack, if not more. Just depends on your own personal family and usage.
Right, because when the roll runs out, you need another roll. Mm-hmm. The time to go to the store and get another roll has passed.
Another thing we've talked about going to the grocery store and picking up an extra can or two of foods that you like and are going to eat, and those extra things you pick up go into your prepper pantry. And I've noticed when I've gone to the grocery store, particularly in the canned vegetables and fruits department, they now sell 4 and 6 packs of canned vegetables and fruits. So even the grocery store is helping us become better preppers. And a lot of times when you know you're going to consume a lot of canned corn, canned green beans, canned carrots, that sort of thing, to buy them in a 4-pack or a 6-pack, they actually do reduce the price. And so it makes a lot of sense. Go ahead and buy it that way, save a little bit more money, become a better prepper. So I'm finding that there, or the bulk stores where you can buy bulk tomato sauce, bulk soup, bread, rolls, that sort of thing in packs where you can put some bread and rolls in the freezer, save them for later. They're perfectly good to take out of the freezer when you need them.
Right. And we need some cash on hand for outages. You know, we saw something a couple of months back where it was not national, but there were cities, pockets of areas across the country that their credit card machines, their debit card machines shut down for that day. And if you didn't have cash, you weren't making purchases.
All right. Some bank systems, their online presence would crash.
And, you know, I've had that with my own bank, which is one reason I carry two different debit cards now. Is that my bank had the problem and I couldn't use the
card from the that bank. Right.
And so it's wise to have a backup. So I have a backup debit card and I carry cash now that I was not carrying a year ago. I've increased the amount of cash. I can at least buy a tank of gas and a meal to get home. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not talking about wads and wads of cash, but I try to keep $50 or $100 available to be able to get home if I need to. And I've started putting that in smaller bills as well.
And, you know, because of social distancing, I actually feel safer carrying more cash than I have before. Someone said, I don't feel all that safe carrying all that cash. And I said, you know, since social distancing kind of works for that, I'm using it as a form of security. More and more people know they have to keep away from me and each other, and I need to keep away from them. So I'm actually less fearful to carry my cash now.
You're a 6-foot redhead. They understand.
I guess I must have some sort of warning label, just an unwritten warning label on me.
That's why God put red hair on some women as a warning label.
Well, we want to emphasize again, we should get prepared when? Now, before the emergency arises, because when the emergency arises and when we need the resources that we need, the time to prepare for that has already passed. We cannot emphasize that enough.
Right. And we should get prepared because we don't want to be dependent on the government or on someone else when the need arises.
You know, it's interesting to think that there are folks out there that believe that, you know, aunt and uncle so-and-so, or grandma this, or my dad over there, my mom over here, they'll come look after me when something happens. Well, here's the thing, like in a tornado or a storm setting, someone may very well want to get to you to try to help you, but if they cannot make it down the road and all of your dependence is on their arriving and they cannot arrive, what are you going to do?
That, and, you know, we can be out of electricity for days, weeks.
I've seen it.
Hurricanes, it can go a month or more, and you need to be prepared for those situations. And it just helps us to be self-sufficient through the event. Some folks think when FEMA comes to town that they're bringing a string of tractor trailers and all of this food and water and stuff. And
I think people misunderstand what FEMA actually does. I'd like for you to tell the listeners, what's FEMA's actual duty?
Basically, they do some logistics and they pay the bill. When FEMA comes to town, it's usually one or two people.
Yeah, they're not lifting up the chainsaws and driving the supply trucks. They're just basically brokering
exactly
the information to try to get help to come.
They're putting the weight of the federal government behind this recovery situation.
Exactly.
Now, they can request National Guard assistance and such as that, but those guys are usually not running chainsaws and pulling debris and putting tarps on roofs.
That's not their job.
That's not their job. They're coming in to provide security, to keep down looting. And
they're assessing a situation.
Right. FEMA comes in, assesses the situation. They call for resources, and they pay the bills when it's over.
Right. And then they depart because their job is done. They pass that off to the Red Cross, the Salvation Army, the disaster relief groups, many of whom are run by private organizations like
churches and things like that. Back to the state and the local EMA. They're the ones that are in charge again. The local folks, it takes the federal contracts out and things like that. So there's just a lot involved there. But one of the things that folks don't understand, and we put this in our second book, and we've talked about it before on podcast, is that sometimes it takes as much as 9 days for FEMA to get in and get set up and get things running.
All right, because they physically have to come into the situation.
Right. These folks are sitting on ready to be deployed for 2 weeks at a time. They have federal credit card. They get on an airplane, they fly as close as they can, they rent a vehicle, and they drive in the rest of the way. Now, this has to be after roadways are cleared because they can't drive, you know, they're not renting a big SUV four-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. They're getting a little Taurus or
plain old rental car.
And so the roads have to be open for them to get in. This is one of the reasons that FEMA has always talked about us being ready for 72 hours, because we're on our own for the first few days. And after the Texas situation and after some of the hurricane situations, this is moving to 14 days. The literature will change to be self-sufficient for 14 days.
That's pretty sensible. It really is. And you've got to think about that 14 days times the number of people in your household.
Well, yes, but I mean, you're not going to be seeing the federal government doesn't bring food to you.
No.
So you need to be prepared to feed your family. And I would say bare minimum is 14 days for anybody. And I'm not talking about a hardcore prepper there. I'm talking about, you know,
space anyone. And don't forget, that includes water. You must store water.
And we advocate a gallon and a half per day per person. And then don't forget the pets. And that's another issue.
That's a whole other podcast.
There's a reason for that 72-hour recommendation. And there's a reason that that's going to be changing to 14 days. And that is because the government knows that they're sorely lacking in major disaster response.
You know, that was so well depicted this past February when the entire state of Texas, from the very top to the very coastline bottom, was covered up in an ice and snow blizzard of historic and unprecedented proportions.
Who would ever thought that there would be a snowstorm on the Texas-Mexico border?
Well, Texas certainly didn't think so, and they were the very first to say, look, This hit us hard, quick, fast, and in a hurry, and we were largely unprepared. Now, there were plenty of people in Texas that were preppers and were prepared, but even they had to admit this took them all the way out to the edge of their prep preparedness because it was so unprecedented. You don't normally find South Texas streets littered with feet of snow and ice.
Right.
And they didn't have a lot of materials that you need, the salts for the road and the off-roading tires and that sort of thing. And that's just one example of one state that went through a natural weather disaster. Well, don't you know Texas is different now?
Well, they're preparing.
There's a whole new group of preppers there now.
They're preparing a lot different. Mm-hmm. We talked about how long it takes FEMA to get there. Now, there are going to be people preparing and distributing food. Southern Baptists do this. Southern Baptists prepare about 80% of the food that's distributed by the Red Cross worldwide. And the Salvation Army does a good job of distributing food. There are local churches that do that. But, you know, sometimes this takes a couple of days, even for these organizations that are prepared to do that.
Exactly.
Those feeding units come from out of town, out of state. You know, they may have a 400-mile drive to be able to come, and it's going to take them a day to get there, a day to get everything set up, and then the third day they can start preparing food. I don't want to be dependent on that. I don't want to be dependent on others to have to bring us food, water, and other things like that. And I certainly don't want my family to be living in a FEMA camp. So that's one of the reasons that we prepare.
Hey, listen, I just want to tell you about a couple of books that you need to add to your collection and give as gifts. I highly encourage that you go to Amazon and look up this title, Making Contact During Emergencies. This is information that may save your life or the life of someone you care about. If injured, lost, or found in a disaster or another type of emergency. This book was written by Mark and Krista Lally. I'm Krista and Mark is my husband. Book number two that we wrote that we're especially proud of and has gotten a lot of buzz is entitled Practical Prepping for Everyday People. This is a common sense guide on preparing for life's emergencies. And when we say practical prepping, we mean the type of emergencies you're going to find yourself in and day out. Car emergencies, dead batteries, flat tires, storm damage. The roof has gotten blown off. You find that you have no power, no electricity, no devices are working. These kinds of things are happening to somebody somewhere every single day. And we were astonished when we did a little research to find that a vast majority of people found themselves woefully unprepared for one or more of these types of emergencies. And particularly after this COVID year that we've experienced, I think a whole lot more of us are paying closer attention to things like grocery store supply chains, the ability to be able to buy gas, the ability to be able to move freely about, or what's going to happen if we do have to stay home for 3 weeks solid. Practical Prepping for Everyday People by Mark and Krista Lally, also Making Contact During Emergencies. Go to Amazon, look these up, add these to your collection. We sure appreciate it. We should get prepared because the government in so many countries, just to say it in the hard real talk, they really don't care about their own people. A lot of times politicians are getting too caught up in protecting their own power. And so they write these laws that exempt themselves and then they ignore the laws that are already in place. And they just get really interested in the party or the system or who gets the credit for doing right for the people. And the people are just kind of forgotten or last on the list. And so trying to depend on governments and politicians who have promised they're going to take care of you, but when it really hits the fan,
they really don't care.
You find out that they're powerless to help you in a lot of cases. And sometimes they don't care as much as they say they did. And you've just got to accept that as a reality. It's not personal for them, it's business.
And interestingly, both parties, and I'm not trying to get political here, I'm indicting both parties with this, they oppose term limits.
Right. So, why would you want to give up a sweet gig like that?
Right. Yeah. They don't want to give up the gig that they have. So anyway, they're too interested in who or which party gets the credit for what's being done or and they don't do the right thing for the people. We saw this a lot with the COVID pandemic.
Oh, yeah, it was a large opportunity for political parties to really kind of reveal.
There was a lot of posturing there, and there was a lot of stalling. And anyway, the government doesn't care, and they lie to the citizens. Believe it or not, when truthfulness would be a lot easier.
It would actually would be easier to deal with truthfulness because at least we'd know it's the truth.
Right. And then another example of them not caring about the average person, they closed down local businesses while big businesses were allowed to continue making major amounts of money. They declared these big box stores as essential businesses because they sold groceries. And I don't have a problem with that, okay? But they closed down the clothing store that would have a little small mom-and-pop clothing store that would have one or two people in the store at a time, yet they could go to the big box store and buy clothing.
Yes, as they were being, as we as a nation were being told to avoid groups and avoid crowds. So instead of having a small group in a little store, we're out there with 450 other people in the big box store at the same time. Makes sense? Not really. And so that's, we're only citing these examples to let you know that the government is not the place for you to reside your confidence in them looking after you and seeing to your needs on your timetable. In some respects, what we're trying to say here is, in a natural disaster or a man-made disaster, you essentially are going to be on your own.
The government's got
to handle it.
The government cannot be counted on to provide essentials in a crisis. Not one roll of toilet tissue was distributed by the federal government.
Right, yeah, not one.
Not one bit of food was delivered during the lockdowns.
Not by the government, anyway.
No.
Now, I will have to give credit where credit's due so that we don't paint such a dark, bleak picture. I will say, to the American people's credit, healthcare workers and educators and those that were just literally had the brakes put on their lives and were told within a matter of hours, you've got to pretty much change everything you know to do and change the ways that you do it and change the forms that it's going to take. The American people are very resilient and the American people have a backbone and they do have a sense of, I will call it a national neighborhood sense of community, of this is something that we've got to come together, we've got to keep our clear, cool heads, and I praise and commend at least the American people, and I only say that because it's where I live, I praise and commend all nations that did what they had to do in order to try to flatten this curve.
The
and
people
I appreciate
of the nations.
That. I appreciate that, but that's the resilience that makes a successful prepper.
Right, but we're discussing the governments at this particular point. The point here is that the government doesn't care about the individual.
And so don't get all flustered about that. Accept that as reality and understand that it's kind of always been that way. That's really nothing terribly new. It might be new in your world or your thinking, but that's not a new thing. So don't feel like the government is going to supply you with safety, security, protection, and resources when if something really cataclysmic takes place, there may be no government.
Right. So the bottom line is we should get prepared because the government, in quotation marks, in most countries, really doesn't care about its own people. That's the point.
Wait, we need to prepare also because we've seen how the supply chain is a very fragile institution. Sometimes it's like a gracious plenty, and then other times a supply chain has been known to have very large breaks in it for very long periods of time.
We'll go back to Texas. If you could get to the grocery store may not have anything to sell.
Right. I think they got raided out pretty early on as the snow began to fall and people realized, hey, this is serious. You know how human nature is. People are going to go in there and they're going to grab and they're going to fight one another and they're going to take more than they really need because they haven't prepped.
For years, we have accused the weather folks and the bread and milk folks of conspiracy because when the weatherman uses the snow word,
what happens?
Everybody heads to
the grocery store to
buy milk and bread. And if you're not a prepper, you're going to be having milk and bread sandwiches. But we've gotten into this just-in-time delivery. There's no longer the great big back room in the grocery stores.
Right, exactly. They actually just stock some of them on a daily basis or even a twice or three-time daily basis.
They do, but I read something the other day that said there's about 3 days of food on the grocery shelves at any particular point in time.
Mm-hmm.
3 days worth of food. That's 3 days of eating. That's not 3 days of selling. So they could easily sell out.
Oh, yes.
In a day.
And you notice too, this last COVID year, those of us that went to the grocery store, we found notices placed there by the management that says, we are now limiting your meats, your paper products. You may now choose one, two, at the limit, because they saw their supply chain had a break in it and they were trying to serve everyone, but also limit what normally nobody's going to tell you couldn't buy 20 cans of something.
But when the meat counter said limit two and it was empty, mm-hmm. What's the point?
Exactly. The supply chain is very fragile. And if you've not seen that in your area, consider yourself lucky, but understand that it's not always going to be that way.
And, you know, it could be an internet issue. It could be a computer issue. And you can't blame the guy at the warehouse, okay?
No.
Everything is on computer now. All of their inventory, all of their orders, everything. Some of it's computerized as far as pulling the materials to be shipped out. The computer system is down. You can't blame the guy that's in charge of the warehouse for not sending it out because he can't account for it.
Exactly.
There's got to be billing. There's got to be all kinds of things that go into that. So you can't blame him. So the food may be in the warehouse, but not able to go to the store because of a computer issue. And how many times do we see computer issues?
Well, we do. And a thought just jumped into my head. And I do want to stress this, that as preppers, that I want us to be prepared with the resources we need to live. But I think there's something else we need to prep. And that is our patience, our compassion, and our understanding. When things are really rough and really horrible, we've got to also remember our humanity, and we've got to understand that we're dealing with perhaps a cataclysmic situation, but those things are temporary and they'll pass, and we need to understand the larger picture. So when you're prepping your soup and your water and your rice and your beans and your clothing and your blankets, pack in a little extra patience, quite a bit of understanding, and a great deal of compassion.
So the time to prep is now, and we need to prep for a multitude of reasons, because as Krista always says, stuff happens. Stay prepared.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today, and please leave us a 5-star review. That helps more people be able to hear this podcast. Share it with your friends and family. You can reach us on Facebook at Practical Prepping. Email at info@practicalprepping.info, and our website is practicalprepping.info. And as always, remember, stuff happens. Stay prepared.